Welcome to the Lou Cutino Show, where we can learn to reimagine our lifestyle.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Reimagine Your Lifestyle. Today, we have a fabulous, fabulous, very, very, very busy doctor with us, and we're privileged to have you, Dr. Ganesh. It's a pleasure to have you. And like I was saying earlier, you know, I wouldn't be able to do justice with your resume, so I would love for you to talk about your journey, you know, and currently how you've moved from transplants to oncology, which is your passion. And firstly, why did you even move into this whole role of being a doctor? Would love to hear your story.
Wow. So first of all, thanks, Luke, for having me over. Heard a lot of great things about you and your team from a lot of our patients. And it's really very nice and heartening to see that you guys are doing so much of good work in changing people's lifestyles and getting them back on track and getting them to adopt healthier lifestyles, which I think is absolutely the need of the hour. So great work. And
oh, thank you. We have patients who come from, you know, being treated by you, and it makes the job, you know, just half right. So much more easier than that.
Right.
So thank you for everything that you do as well. Right. Our patients speak so highly about your work and your expertise. So we're really grateful. Thank you.
Great. So I've been a Bombay boy all through. I started in KEM Hospital, mm-hmm. and then did my postgrads in surgery from the Sion Hospital in Mumbai. After which, I've been in Tata for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's the mecca of cancer surgery or cancer treatment in India. Probably one of the busiest and best centers in the world, which is where a lot of us who are presently practicing oncology across the country are trained at Tata. And we owe a lot to Tata, you know, and we are all proud alumni of Tata Memorial Hospital. And subsequently, there were certain things that we were not doing much of in Tata at that time. That was almost 18 years back. I went abroad to train with one of the best liver surgeons in the world, Professor Jacques Belghetti. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very busy liver and pancreas unit. Where, you know, we got further insights into how, you know, more challenging cases, more difficult things that were not being done at that time here. And I think that was an invaluable experience. I trained there for a year and a half and then got back here. And the last 18 years have been just busy all through for the first couple of years at Bombay Hospital and then a long stint at Hinduja. Mm-hmm. Recently, two and a half years back, we as a whole group moved to Nanavati Max. Presently, I head the GI oncology service there. And me and my team, you know, we cater to all gastrointestinal, liver and pancreatic cancers. Mm-hmm. And we are one of the highest volume units apart from Tata. I think some of the most complex and one of the highest volume units in GI oncology is ours. And we continue to help and serve as many patients as we can.
Now that's brilliant. Doctor, what are you seeing changed in the last 5 years, 10 years before? Because I started my practice 13 years ago and every year it's been so different. The way we've seen the progression of certain diseases, the way we've seen how disease changes in a body, symptoms, and, you know, a lot of them have become asymptomatic, you know, hence requiring early screenings as a preventive method. What have your observations been in the whole liver, pancreatic, and GI space?
So some things have changed, some things haven't. Mm-hmm. We are seeing more and more cancers, for sure. I think it's got a lot of reasons. One is, you know, some are good reasons and some are not. So the good reasons are that I think we're picking up more and more. Mm-hmm. I think people are becoming more aware. People are getting checked, getting screened. And that's why we're picking up more and more cancers. And usually the ones that are picked up are usually at an early stage. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good sign. I think previously, if you look at it 20 years back, when I was at Tata, at least 7 or 8 out of every 10, or maybe 9 on 10 patients would be, beyond the stage of cure. Mm-hmm. They would come at a very late stage, and we would not be able to do much for them. On the other hand, today, I think that slowly those numbers are changing, at least in urban India. We're seeing at least 3 or 4 out of 10 where we can, offer them a potentially curative treatment. That's very encouraging. I think we are slowly getting to, bridging the gap between the West and where we are in terms of awareness. So I think that's a big plus. The minus is that, the reasons why the cancers are going up is also probably because we've adopted, unfortunately, we ape the West.
Mm-hmm.
Our lifestyles are more and more westernized. And so we're seeing more and more of Western cancers.
Yeah.
India had its own set of cancers. So 20 years back, mm-hmm. Cancer is a very interesting disease because, there are certain cancers which are more prevalent among the economically challenged mm-hmm. population. And we used to see a lot of that. And today, we see there's a shift in the kind of patterns that we are seeing. We see more and more of the rich cancers, for example, So, because that's got to do with the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to do with obesity. It's got to do with people being overweight, people, being stressed, people being, having a very, very unhealthy lifestyle in terms of their food, in terms of alcohol consumption, in terms of smoking. So, that's a very different lifestyle that there's a lot of, that is the pattern that we see. One of the, very good example is gastric cancer. There are distinctly two types of gastric cancers. One is, cancers of the stomach in towards the lower part of the stomach, mm-hmm. which is usually associated with something called H. pylori, which is, a bacterium which it's an infective. When people have this for a long time, that's one of the pre-malignant conditions and slowly that develops into cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was typically seen in lower socioeconomic groups, where they didn't have access to clean water or, they would chronically be infected.
Mm-hmm.
And that was India's cancer. That was, we used to see 8 on 10 patients would have distal gastric cancers. The West would see a lot of, the esophagogastric junction cancers. It's higher up. That's happens when people are obese, overweight, have a lot of reflux, mm-hmm. esophagitis, and that causes cancer. That's a disease of the rich.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the more urban lifestyles and so on and so forth. And today in India, in urban India, 1 out of every 2 that I see are the proximal, the GE junction cancers. So it's very interesting, the kind of change in, the pattern of cancer that mm-hmm. we see. On the other hand, rural India still has a very different, very different demographics in terms of the cancers that we see in rural India. So it's very interesting, and I think it's a reflection of how India is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, colorectal cancers, for example, were hardly, India was a very low incidence of colorectal cancer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But today in urban India, we're seeing more and more and more. So I think, and that's again got to do completely with the diet.
It's amazing how you mentioned this because, in lifestyle medicine, what we're seeing is H. pylori right now has become a condition of, the urban the urban people.
Yes.
Like it's so easy today to find out that people have been on antacids because the symptoms of acidity and low stomach acid are the same. So they've been getting the symptoms and popping more antacids and their stomach acid is so low. I think one of our most commonly prescribed tests today is an H. pylori test.
That's
and
right.
One in one will come back with the symptoms when they have constant burping or they have all of these issues that they're not digesting protein. And it's unbelievable how we run a program also, it's called Aapke Liye, where we do the economically challenged people absolutely free. So the whole idea is that's changed completely. We're still seeing like water hygiene issues and all of that stuff, but very, very different. And including another beautiful point that you brought up was, yeah, the acid reflux, which is one in two of our patients have it. And because of late night meals, overeating, and purely lifestyle. And we never saw this 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
We were dealing with normal weight gain and, you know, people were changing cultures, like you said, aping the West and, you know, slowly introducing those bad habits. But today it's become pretty uniform. So, Doctor, I wanted to ask you, since you were on the topic of the gut, you know, when you mentioned diet, you mentioned all of these things, what are some of the changes that you think the country needs to make right now in order to have better gastric health? Because besides the cancer, I mean, before the cancer, there are always symptoms. It's acidity, it's low stomach acid. You know, what do you see from the eyes of an oncologist?
Yeah. You know, when it comes to dietary and food habits, I think what the traditional Indian diet and the traditional Indian teachings or the, you know, tenets that you have an early meal, you space out your meals well, you, you know, you include a lot of fruits and veggies in your meals. Yeah. Those things are definitely something that holds good. I think another very good aspect of the Indian diet was that it's always fresh. Mm-hmm. Our mothers always cooked fresh food for us. Most of us are yet lucky in India. I think a lot of homes still follow the same thing. Compare that with, a Western lifestyle where I know that, you know, for some of our, friends and relatives who stay there have their refrigerators stocked with processed foods because they just don't have the time. And I think slowly, if you see the very nuclear families, people extremely busy, don't have time to or access to freshly cooked food, are adopting more and more of processed meals. This is one of the causes of colorectal cancers. Mm-hmm. The additives that are added in processed foods, unfortunately, the emulsifiers that are added in processed foods are one of the carcinogenic agents. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to scare people, but unfortunately, that's true.
It's the truth, yeah.
It's true. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that processed foods or refrigerated foods or these frozen foods are it's okay for an occasional consumption, but it's definitely a no for a daily consumption.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that the uber urban India, the millennials need to take stock of, because it's unfortunate again that we're seeing a lot of young patients coming to us with cancers, which we were not seeing 20 years back. It was usually a disease of, you know, of the old people beyond 50s, 60s, 70s would come to us. The occasional patient would be young. Today in my clinic, one in four patients is below the age of 40. Wow. It's alarming because, and again, it's got to do with a lot of lifestyle issues. Mm-hmm. Apart from the fact that, yes, there's genetics, which has got a big role to play.
True,
there's the environment, there's pollution. There are a multitude of factors, but I think the diet definitely has a big role to play, and I think that's very important. Processed foods, a good balance of carbs and proteins and fat. Extreme diets are always a problem sometimes.
Yeah.
The other thing that we notice is one of the flip sides of the typical Indian diet, which I see, is that a lot of our purely vegetarian patients are usually obese because of, they've been having just carbs all their lives. And
But they were more active 10 years ago.
They were more active, yes, they were. But at the same time, we do see that, they have low reserves in terms of proteins. A mix and match of carbs and proteins, I think, add to it a little bit of fat, and I think that would be your ideal diet with a lot of greens and a lot of fruits and vegetables and healthy cooked meals. So one of the other factors for cancers is known to be red meat, especially smoked red meat in high quantities is a known carcinogenic agent. And the other thing is, of course, obesity is one of the causes of cancer as well. Whether you look at colorectal cancers or pancreatic cancers, there's very clear, evidence now that obesity and long-standing obesity or being overweight is one of the factors that increases the incidence of these cancers. And it's all got to do with more and more carbs that you keep loading in.
So, and a sedentary lifestyle. You know, going back to this eating of outside food versus home food, we had maybe a 30% population of patients who were just not getting better with their gut issues and lifestyle. And then COVID happened. In the first 1 month of COVID, this batch of 30% of patients who would never get their results started beautifully changing. And the only one change was they were forced to eat home food. And it's unbelievable how things like chronic constipation, gas, acid reflux, the only change that happened was the food. They were eating outside food most of their meals because they were either traveling or just, you know, out with their friends. And all of that stopped in the first couple of months. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievable just that one change of moving from outside food to home food brought about so much of normalcy in their overall bowel movement, their gut, their liver health. We had people with a grade one come to a mild just by changing how they eat. Are you seeing a lot of fatty liver cases today, non-alcoholic as well as, of course, alcoholic fatty?
Yes.
Could you talk about that? And if it's not treated or people don't change their lifestyle, actually how bad it could get? Because one of our biggest cases right now are cirrhotic livers in young people, non-alcoholic. And that's very alarming for us. I would love for you to share some info on that.
So liver cancers is one of my, you know, my passions. Mm-hmm. We've been doing we get cases from all over the country and even from abroad because of our expertise in liver cancers. So it's been very interesting and very, very pertinent question, because we've found that there's been a big change in the demographics of liver cancers as well. And there's a condition called hepatocellular carcinoma, mm-hmm. called HCC, mm-hmm. which happens in the background of cirrhosis. And we found that previously we would get most of the patients with HCC in the background of either a hepatitis B or a hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. Because that was an era in India where blood banks were unregulated 20, 30 years back. People were not screening blood enough for hep B or hep C. People were not very particular about the use of intravenous. You know, there were a lot of hospitals or doctors would use repeat using needles.
Yeah.
Some drug abuse was fairly rampant, mm-hmm. the IV, you know, the injectable drug abuse. So all of this would cause a lot of hepatitis B and C, and these patients over years would develop tumors. And that was the most common cause at that time. Fast forward today, where hepatitis B and C both are treatable now, mm-hmm. there are drugs available, so those numbers are coming down. And what's going up is the non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, that's called NASH. That's basically fatty liver, mm. where the liver it's purely dietary. Mm. It's purely dietary and sedentary lifestyle, no exercise, and just load carbs and fat. Yeah. And that all keeps getting deposited in the liver. And slowly, the liver, which is absolutely healthy, starts piling on fat, called the fatty liver. And that fat starts becoming what is known as fibrosis. And that fibrosis turns into cirrhosis. Mm-hmm. And at some point, these livers, which are unhealthy, also unfortunately are very prone to developing cancers called HCC. Mm-hmm. So this is a pattern that we are seeing. And we are seeing almost one out of two of the liver cancers that I see are because of NASH.
Wow.
And it's a serious problem. Wow. And it's just rising.
But you're right when you say it is purely either, you know, the overload of fructose on the liver, carbohydrates, and a sedentary lifestyle. Because the only thing that's reversing it, people coming down, we've seen a grade 3 come to a 2 and a 1 when they really decide enough is enough. And they start working out, they start changing their diet. It's unbelievable how the liver itself, it is one of the most regenerative organs, right? Anyway.
It is a very forgiving organ.
Yeah.
But you have to make the effort.
Yeah, not cross the set point. Yeah.
That's right.
No, that's amazing. So, doctor, I wanted to ask you in regards to this. So we have non-alcoholic, we have alcoholic fatty liver. I wanted to ask you that when it comes to the pancreas, I mean, everything in the human body is interconnected with each other, whether, you know, you have a problem with the gallbladder, it's going to affect the pancreas, vice versa. The rise of pancreatic cancer, that's alarming as well, given the amount of, there is progress in science and medicine as well, but it still happens to be something which a lot of people are detecting really late in life. Because I think as an Indian culture, people learn to live with their gastric issues, not getting them checked. Like, we have so many women who, and men, who think constipation is normal. It's like, they don't think it's a big deal, and they've been chronically constipated 3-4 days without passing a motion and just thinking it's normal, like they've learned to live with acidity. Can you explain to us how all of these little things, if ignored, eventually leads to affecting all of these organs in our body?
Yes, so I think there's a lot of, if you see a lot of, so you're absolutely right about the pancreatic cancers. I think there's been, like all other cancers, I think we're definitely seeing an increase in the numbers. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's a cancer which often is detected late.
Late, yeah.
And the outcomes are still dismal because it's one cancer where, probably 1 on 10 or 2 on 10 are the ones that are yet curative. Mm-hmm. And 8 on 10 come to us at a stage where we don't have much to offer in terms of cure. Causes, again, this is one of the cancers where, you know, science is yet to know, or there are a lot of unanswered questions about why a particular person develops pancreatic cancer. There are some known factors, and one of them is obesity, one of them is alcohol, smoking.
Yeah.
A poor lifestyle, of course, contributes to all cancers. But there's a lot which is yet to be discovered when it comes to pancreatic cancer. But what is important to know is that, as you very rightly mentioned, is that people should learn to not keep tolerating or putting up with symptoms. Mm. And they need to get to a doctor early.
Yeah.
And get investigated. And, you know, that's the only chance that they have to kind of get things sorted. The gut microbiome is another huge area of research now,
mm-hmm.
which is supposed to be one of the core factors or causes of any cancer,
mm-hmm.
especially gastrointestinal or liver or pancreas. But it's got a role to play in all abdominal cancers. So it's a very interesting concept because, the human gut has got microorganisms which reside. They're normal. All of us have these microbes and there are millions of them. There are 10 times the number of microbes than the number of cells that we have. So it's a huge colony of microorganisms that reside within our gut. And a lot of them are friendly bacteria. They help process food. They help maintain certain balances and checks and balances in the body. And with more and more chronic inflammation, sometimes, people just pop in antibiotics when they're not needed. There's a lot of antibiotic abuse that happens in India. There's a lot of, this is another scary situation, is that a lot of non-vegetarian food today is, I'm not sure if, you guys are aware that a lot of chicken, for example, or they are fed with antibiotics to kind of increase the yield.
Yeah.
And so all that is kind of processed.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, these antibiotics have a harmful effect on the resident flora of the mm-hmm. gut. And that changes a lot of balances. And in fact, that is one of the common, that's now touted to be one of the most important causes of cancers. And apart from cancers, a lot of other problems like autoimmune conditions or, inflammatory bowel disease,
mm-hmm.
all of these are linked to the gut microbiome. So that's very interesting. And the next 5 to 10 years is going to be a lot of research and a lot of work being put into the gut microbiome.
So thanks for sharing that, Doctor. So what would your advice be in terms of screenings? See, we have symptoms and, we always tell people if you have gut issues, you don't take it lightly because your body's telling you something's wrong, whether it's indigestion, whether it's bloating, whether it's acidity. What would your advice be to people? What are some of the screenings we can do as a preventive method to kind of, be in track with our medical checkups and everything else?
So again, very pertinent question. So let's talk about screenings from each cancer point of view. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be more, that'll be easier. So we can start with colorectal cancer, where I think the most important thing is to not ignore blood and stool.
Mm-hmm.
I think in you know, if I talk to a lot of my patients, I think a lot of them, when they come to us, you know, after the entire diagnosis has been made, and you ask them, since when have you been having these symptoms? It's usually 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
6 months is a long time to be tolerating or putting up with passing blood and stool. And then you realize that it's just 15, 20 days back when it really got out of hand that they actually went and got tested and got investigated. Because everyone thinks that blood and stool is just piles.
Mm.
Or one of those perianal conditions. And people don't really think that this could be something more sinister. And I think that's important. That awareness is very important. So I think if there's one message that needs to go across, mm-hmm. is not to ignore a symptom that is persistent. Any alteration in bowel habits, which is chronic. I mean, I can understand that, you know, occasionally people get constipated or have loosies, but if it's a chronic thing where it just keeps happening over a couple of months and mm-hmm. it's not getting better, or if one is passing blood and stool, that's not normal,
mm-hmm.
and they need to go to a doctor and get checked. And that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And it, even if somebody is young, it can still be, it could very much still be a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important, because usually people think that, you know, I'm young, I'm just 30 years old, why would I?
Yeah.
So, you know, it wouldn't even cross their mind. But unfortunately, I'm seeing one in four of my patients are young. So mm-hmm. I think that's very important for people to be aware of, because these are all completely treatable conditions if you pick them up early.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to absolutely be, aware of this. You know, any weight loss which is persistent, I think it's important to not ignore that. I mean, people tend to associate it as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trying to lose weight for a long time. And when it actually happens, they're delighted.
Yeah.
But when it's not in sync with the efforts that you've taken,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've not really started working out or changed your diet and you're still losing weight, that means there's something happening inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to be aware of that. I think that's important. Every diabetic, I think, needs to be screened, whether they have fatty liver.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have fatty liver, or anyone who's obese, anyone who's overweight, must get screened for a fatty liver.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do have fatty liver, I think a regular ultrasound, mm-hmm. at least once in 6 months, once in a year, is important, so that you can pick up these tumors much earlier.
Yeah.
In a Western country, if colorectal screening is very common, people do get screening colonoscopies done,
mm-hmm.
On an annual basis. It's not yet prevalent in India,
mm-hmm.
and we don't recommend it in India either, because the incidence is way lesser than the West even today. But there are certain familial conditions, certain colorectal cancers run in families,
mm-hmm.
and we definitely advise screening for those families.
Right.
But again, never to ignore a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Always, get to a doctor the moment you have a symptom that is persistent.
Mm-hmm.
Another area where, pancreatic cancer, which we spoke about some time back, the commonest manifestation or the commonest presentation is jaundice. And people, again, in India, even a lot of educated people or urban people still continue to think that it is, something that can be treated with Ayurveda or homeopathy, and they keep taking medication. Still, the jaundice is so severe that it's not settling down, and then they come to us.
Mm.
So a painless jaundice is one of the signs of pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from the regular viral hepatitis that happens because of bad water or food, the hepatitis A, which is what we normally, you know, the colloquial jaundice or kavil in Marathi would be that jaundice. But a lot of patients mistake, you know, the jaundice because of the cancer for this jaundice and then just keep taking some local medication, some quacks keep treating them, and then suddenly they end up with an advanced stage of the disease. So these are some of the, you know, it's rather than screening, which in India is difficult because of a 1.5 billion population. So screening is very, very, you know, it will be a huge economic burden. And I don't think it's, you know, from an economic standpoint, it's not a viable option for a country like India. However, and there's no limit to screening. I mean, you can be paranoid and keep checking. Yeah. But I think it's more important to pick up signs early.
Symptoms,
and the moment you have your symptoms or your signs, you immediately go to a doc. I think that would be the message.
Any blood markers that you would look at, like, I mean, besides an unusually high CRP without injury, is there anything else that you would look in a blood parameter report, that liver enzymes, of course, if you can't correlate it with anything, anything else that you would look at?
So there
markers?
Are tumor markers for various conditions, but, you know, they're not part of a particular screening protocol. We would not advise that as a screening.
Because a lot of people just do that on their own and they come back paranoid and there's absolutely nothing, you know, to be correlated.
Yeah,
with,
so. And we do get patients on and off and, you know, we have a tough time convincing them that things are okay.
Yeah, their CA markers are high and they're like, no, but how can you say it's not?
Yeah, so then that leads to a complete, you know, rigmarole of tests and then the PET scans and the works. So nowadays, a lot of labs offer these packages where they say a complete cancer screening package, but it's impossible to have a single package that screens you from head to toe. I think it's more important to do a regular health check. I think it's important to be vigilant about certain red flags. And I think if the moment you start feeling unwell, more tired than normal, lose weight, don't feel like eating, and any of the other symptoms that I mentioned, you know, where passing stool, blood in stool, or any blood in the vomitus, or any lumps or bumps anywhere in the body which are not settling down. I think these are all signs that one should look out for. And that's the point to immediately go to a doctor and get tested.
No, that's helpful. I want to talk about stools again. You know, while we understand constipation, diarrhea, loose stools, broken stools, based on your diet, your stools can change. They can be completely well-formed, but you have a great meal with a lot of palak and saag and all of that stuff, more fibrous. Your stool may not be well-formed, but it's a good volume. And this changes with people's diet. And a lot of people get alarmed. They expect it has to be. A lot of people look at the Bristol stool chart and say, oh, it's not like this. Is there a problem? But our diet obviously affects it. When people have more magnesium, like bananas and nuts and seeds, their stools are very different. Of course, there's a difference between a constipated, really, really hard stool and then when you have your watery diarrhea stools, when you know probably it's an infection or it's a problem with your microbiome. And some people pass two stools a day and some people pass three with efficient digestive systems. They eat and 3.5 hours later, they may pass a beautiful stool with absolutely no symptoms. What's your take on this, given our diverse culture? When I look at Europeans who have their fixed meals, it'll be like maybe a steak with potatoes and an afternoon salad and a tuna. Their stools are literally the same right through. I wanted to understand your take on this, doctor.
So I think everyone would have their own gut patterns.
Yeah.
And of course, they do vary with the various diets that we may consume. But one would definitely be aware if there's a change in the pattern. And it's not something that happens over a day or a couple of days when you've had something different or when you... But if you notice a pattern that has changed over a month, over a couple of months, I think that's when you would call it as an altered bowel habit.
Yeah.
So there are some by nature who are constipated and there are some by nature who have an irritable gut and keep, you know, going to the washroom more often. And, but when, you know, so they are aware that this is my normal, you know, constitution. But when the gut starts behaving differently over a longer period of time and you see a consistent change in the pattern, I think that's what I would, you would label as an altered bowel habit. And I think that's the time to go and meet somebody.
Do you all use a stool test to actually kind of give you any information based on this as a first
step? Yeah. Yes, that's very, very, very good question, because the simplest test that you can do is a stool for occult blood. While one may not see blood in the stool, frankly, but when you send the stool for a test, you may see blood in the stool under the microscope. And that's one of the commonest screening or the cheapest screening tests that you can do for cancers, for colorectal cancers. There are certain other tests which are available, not yet in India, where the stool is processed for certain markers which can identify cancer-related DNA.
Okay.
And that is now, that's called ColoGuard, is one of the tests that's available in the United States. But again, there it's a 42 to 45 per lakh population incidence in the US compared to a 6 to 7 per lakh in India. So the incidence is way too less in India for us to be using these. But in the not so distant future, I'm sure, these will be available with us. And these are fairly good screening modalities. It's cumbersome to undergo a colonoscopy. And a lot of patients now prefer to get this as a screening test.
Yeah.
So there are certain stool markers available.
What about liquid biopsies? Do you think it's going to come to our country? I heard it's come to Bangalore. I'm not sure yet.
It's already there.
Yeah.
And today we do have a few very, very advanced labs in India. We don't have to send. Most of our tests are done in India. We don't have to send anything abroad, almost never, unless the patient really asks for it. Almost every one of these tests are available with us.
Okay.
They haven't yet completely replaced the traditional biopsies, neither in the West. I think the standard biopsies still remain, whether you go to the United States or whether you're treated here or anywhere else in the world. I think the liquid biopsies are meant for a select group of cases, or in a select group of individuals where, say, we're not seeing a tumor, but we need, we want to see if it's in the cells. But all of it is very much available with us.
Okay. That's right. So, doctor, I mean, you're obviously so busy with the amount of patients and everything that you do. How do you maintain your lifestyle? How do you maintain, your emotional wellness? But before I get there, I wanted to ask you, do you see an impact of emotional wellness and chronic stress, sleep deprivation on the immune systems of your patients and cancers and gut issues? I would love to hear you.
So, yes, I think the emotional aspects are a very under-treated or under-investigated part of patients. And I think all of us also to blame. I mean, I would, we don't really delve into the emotional well-being of the patient when we discuss cancers. Of course, when they come to us with a diagnosis of cancer, they're usually broken, they are anxious, they are scared, they are, there are a variety of emotions. But, what we've always noticed is that, there are, everyone has a different reaction when they're diagnosed with cancers. And we've always found that patients who are very positive, patients who, have their chin up and say, okay, let me see, let's face it. And they sail through the treatment. Yeah. They really do. And time and again, we've seen that. I mean, it's never coincidence. I mean, we used to think that, how would that change things? Yeah. But that's something that's not really studied, that's not documented, but there's a very clear correlation that we see between, a patient who's cheerful, who's positive, who says that, let's get through with this, vis-a-vis a patient who is, depressed, who's broken, who says, I might as well die. People have convinced them to somehow come and get treated. And we've noticed that all the ones that are very anxious, who keep doubting what is going on, who can't trust anybody else, who don't, you know, and we've always found that those patients always struggle in the course of their treatment. And the same treatment is given to A, B, and C.
Yeah, different outcomes.
But you see different outcomes. Yeah. And probably it's got a lot to do with their emotional well-being. So I think it's got a huge
role. Yeah, we see that too, doctor. I mean, drastic difference from the time they're diagnosed, their attitude, through their chemos, through post-surgery. Their attitude just makes this insane difference in their outcome and even in their side effects. Like literally sometimes, so we work very closely with Tata Memorial and a lot of our patients go there for chemotherapy and radiation. And they're like, the ones who are happy, who have just come in smiling, some of their side effects, they don't even get certain side effects compared to the other group that's getting the same kind of chemotherapy. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, because that gives a lot of hope to people as well. Everything may not be documented, but we definitely get to choose our attitude or try to kind of, you know, work towards that attitude.
Yeah.
So back to you. Tell us about your lifestyle, how you manage your time, your emotional wellness, your health, being so busy.
Yeah. As far as emotional well-being is concerned, yes, I think that is, I think for doctors, that's a challenge, because we are faced with very stressful situations throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we over time, we do develop coping strategies. We do try and, you know, not pin down everything that happens to what we are doing, to understand that sometimes nature can have other plans in spite of the best efforts that you do. And I think that's important for every medical, you know, whether it's a doctor or a nurse or anyone who's in the healthcare space should understand that. Of course, we try our very, very best for every patient.
Yeah.
And we, but sometimes, you know, things do get stressful when things don't go as planned. But I think balanced mind is very important. And I think that's something that all of us have to work on. Apart from that, I think to maintain health, I think I'm not a fitness freak, but I try to gym thrice a week.
That's good.
Have my cardios, and I need to keep, you know, my muscle tone good. The long hours of surgery, I need to take care of my back. So I try and do a few things. I try to, something that I was not doing earlier was having my food regularly. It was a very irregular pattern. And that I've changed over the last few years. Even if it means taking a 10-minute break between a long surgery, I make it a point to come out, have a bite, get my, you know, carbs, because you know, surgery is stressful and it tends to get your sugar levels you know, down. So you know, I need the complete focus has to be there. So have a light meal and then go back to surgery.
Amazing.
Otherwise, nothing really much.
Okay.
And but I do try and maintain a fairly healthy lifestyle.
No, thanks. Thank you for sharing that, doctor. Have you seen miracles in your career? I mean, separate science, separate, but, you know, like, you know, I have a couple of surgeons that we work with at Stanford, neurosurgeons, and a lot of them now, after, like, when I ask them this question, they say, Luke, if you asked me this 30 years ago, I would say, we don't believe in it. Everything is science. But today they say, every time we open up the human body for whatever it is, we either see intelligence, we see miracles, we see science, we see everything working. And given the fact that, you know, you did transplants before and now you're opening our bodies with cancers, what do you see? Do you see an intelligence? Do you see an energy? I just want to know, you know, what you see when you do that.
So miracles, yes, they do happen. They happen. I mean, and we see it in patient outcomes. There are patients where we think that this person is, you know, scientifically probably has 6 months to a year. And 3 years down the line, they're still fine and healthy and
beautiful.
We've also seen the other side, where somebody with a very early stage cancer, where we say, this is fine, you know, go ahead. And then 6 months later, and it's like, I'm completely heartbroken. This guy has come back with metastasis elsewhere. And it's unbelievable about, you know, how can a stage one cancer suddenly come? So we've seen it all.
Yeah.
And that's why I said that everything is not under our control.
Correct, yeah.
There are a lot of things we don't know. There are a lot of things that we don't control. And we all know that there's a higher power that controls this. And, you know, and miracles do happen. And when they happen, it's so pleasant. Yeah. It's so good.
Are you a spiritual person? Religious? Spiritual?
I wouldn't say very religious.
But spiritual.
But yes, I do believe in a higher power. I am spiritual.
Has your profession kind of made you more spiritual along
the way? Yes, it makes us very humble. And it makes you very humble because you know that you don't control much.
Mm.
While you do whatever you do, but, you know, somebody else pulls the strings.
Absolutely. Doctor, this has been amazing. Before I let you go, you know, what advice would you give to our audience today? The position you've reached, the entire department that you had, that comes with responsibility and everything else. But if you had to, like if everyone was watching you right now, you know, what message would you give to people in regards to their health, life, the way they live? What would that advice be?
No, I think it's important to find the right balance in life. Mm. I think it's important to maintain a fairly healthy lifestyle. It's important not to take yourself too seriously.
Mm.
I think we all are guilty of it at some point. But I think it's important to, and I think important to give yourself time, which a lot of us don't do. And because we're just running after things. We're running after careers, we're running after money or whatever else we want. But I think it's important to put all of this into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a balanced lifestyle. And I think as a cancer surgeon, I would always say, unfortunately in India, we still ignore a lot of symptoms.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing, if we can change, I think we'd be in a far better space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're getting there. And I think we just need to keep working towards that.
Dr. Ganesh, thank you. This has been so, so amazing. And thank you for being so humble and generous with all of your wisdom. I've truly enjoyed this. And we can't wait for this, you know, to be put out there for everyone else to watch. But thank you for all the amazing work. I mean, we know how hard you'll work. And like, honestly, I mean, it's crazy with the amount of cases we see at our level, which is probably 100-fold at the level that you all work with. But thank you for all of the work that you do. And honestly, for the information you shared and the time you've pulled out to come and be with us.
And
today,
thank you for the wonderful work that you're doing for the society, for the community.
Thank you.
And more power to you.
Oh, thank you. And to you,
thank
you as well, Doctor.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for more. We're going to continue our journey, learning, sharing, and evolving.